Thank you. We can have the lights back, and we'll have these cows keeping us company as we ruminate on regarding Warhol. Jane, although it is not a Warhol retrospective, it almost offers a pretty good selection of this artist's work, doesn't it? It's a way of another way of is it another way of looking at Warhol to think of him, to think of his impact, or he is very much the star of this exhibition.
Well, yeah, clearly based on the title. I think that some other critics have pointed this out, and I know, Blake, you wrote about this show, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, a lot of the work is painting, and there wasn't very much film and some of the sort of non-object-based work that Warhol did do. My sort of feelings, most critics panned this show. I think that Peter Sheldahl was one of the few who actually liked it. I had mixed feelings about it. Initially, my issues were with the categories, which I thought were sort of obvious and sort of conflating too many themes in each one.
Do you want to spell them out for our audience, just because for people who haven't seen the show?
You want me to share what they were?
Yeah, maybe between the three of us, we can remember them all.
Something about
the categories. Okay, so the first was Daily News from Banality to Disaster, and that was, I believe, three galleries. And then there was another gallery, fourth gallery attached to that, which was Daily News, and the emphasis was on death. Then there was Portraiture, Celebrity, and Power, Queer Studies, Shifting Identities, Consuming Images, Appropriation, Seriality, and Abstraction, which I think Roberta Smith said was, you know, just a way of saying repetition, which I thought was kind of funny. And then No Boundaries, Business, Collaborations, and Spectacle. So I don't know whether or not you want me to sort of say what I thought about the show, but first I thought, after, you know, sort of looking at the categories and thinking that, you know, some of the work in the first gallery of the Daily News, it was relatively interesting, but then the second main gallery with that was mostly work that visually looked like pop art, and some of the inclusions in that particular gallery and even that section didn't seem to fit, and a lot of critics have, you know, sort of complained about that, you know, why were the selections made?
Sorry to interrupt, but we're the four critics in town who matter, so let's not worry about the others. Let's really, don't you think? We can, I mean, I'm sorry to...
Okay.
Sorry.
You just derailed my thought here.
Okay, sorry.
It's all right.
Well, the net cast's pretty wide, which is, I think, where you were going.
Yeah, so I think that, yes, I agree with the fact that there were works included that, you know, you wondered why, or they seemed too literal and in some cases misleading. Having the Hans Hock Helmsborough work in that gallery, I took my students from SVA and they just passed right by it, not realizing it was a critique of, you know, Jesse Helms and the support of Marlborough, of various art institutions and this kind of nefarious kind of nexus of art and commerce and corporate support of the arts at the time. But just looked like a giant cigarette box.
And, of course, what they leave out altogether is that there's no work of art that's less Warholian than Hans Hacke's cigarette box.
Exactly.
That here's this thing that has an explicit political message to it, which is just the kind of thing that Warhol never, ever did.
Exactly.
That, I thought, was the most egregious example, and there were lots of them throughout the whole show.
Or Curran's paintings of two lesbians kissing. I mean, you know, it's painting qua painting, and that's exactly the opposite of what Warhol was about.
Yeah, it seemed to me that throughout it was as though there was this...
It was, yeah. I actually had to back up and look at the stupid guides to sort of figure out why, you know, the whys and wherefores of the inclusion, because clearly there were a number of things that just didn't make sense, and that was... Again, as Blake was pointing out, one of the more egregious ones, so, you know, I actually sort of stopped and went all the way back and looked at the goddamn thing and said, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, or even Kuhn's ushering in Banality. I mean, it seemed to be there just because it had Banality in the title.
Would any of these artists have been licensed to do what they do without the imprimatur of...
You know, it struck me that you could sort of do this show and put Rauschenberg's name on it. It would probably be about half the list.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And maybe another 50 artists or whatever the final number was.
And vice versa, you could take any, almost any artist
loosely
and
this,
include and include them in, and it would still be relevant to Warhol.
I think the reverse would have been more interesting is what I thought is, you know, who influenced Warhol would have been much more interesting to me as a show.
I think, Blake, you're right. But I was looking to just go on your point at somebody who had clearly been as big an influence as Warhol. And the person that comes clear to me is Rauschenberg. You know, in part because the combines, obviously, in the art and life business, but also because he probably gets the silk trade before he does.
Yeah.
But I also think that Rauschenberg makes sense for that kind of show, whereas I don't think Warhol does. That is, Rauschenberg can be metified successfully. Rauschenberg's a maker of discrete objects, mostly. I think he makes sense in terms of as the latest old master, in a sense. Whereas I think doing that to Warhol really travesties what Warhol's about, turning him into a connoisseurial figure for the Met to admire, to look at in the most traditional notions of influence, to think of a Warholian school. All of those things seem to do an injustice to what really matters in Warhol.
But that's interesting.
To real radicalism.
Because I didn't read it that way. The way I read it was the Met essentially sort of flexing its muscle and showing that it can do a big contemporary show. A big enough contemporary show to fill the Marcel Breuer building.
On the other hand, it's a big...
Yeah. That's what it seemed like to me, this particular subject.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. But yeah. It seems to me that they're flexing their muscles in exactly the way they would flex their muscles for Rembrandt and his followers, right? That it's assimilating him to the most traditional model of what it is to show art,
art. Then there's their list of sort of... Then there are the bullet points that are meant for Ma and Pa Kansas that Jane just sort of like went through. And I think that's not usual Met practice. Hmm. They generally don't tend to sort of...
And I think, in fairness, they were actually trying to advance a more sophisticated notion than the simplistic influence, the causal.
You think they were?
This is the big one, and these are the little ones, the followers. Yes.
You think they were?
I think they, at least in their labeling, were paying lip service to ideas that influence is bigger and richer than that.
I honestly think this was their pop version of a normal Met show.
That's what I mean. That's exactly right.
Well, I also think, though, the queer studies section was, you know, something to commend Met for, even though there were many artists in that, you know, were not gay, and not that should necessarily be the parameters, but it disturbed me a little bit to see, you know, Richard Avedon and Richard Prince and... David Hockney, and there's so many other artists that could have been included in that section.
Or not.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Or just a show about queer art.
Exactly.
I mean, that might have been
more interesting.
Although that's the one section that I wrote about that I thought worked, that somehow got at some of how complicated Warhol is, that there's a real social dynamic there, that weird shit is happening.
If you accept the premise for the show as a series of collaborations. And that's one of the things that I thought was a bit sort of like underhanded about the show, is that on the one hand, you're coming to see Warhol, but on the other hand, you're coming to see supposedly these quote-unquote collaborations, and the Hockney piece in particular, I was sort of struck by, because, you know, Hockney and Warhol are kind of an Edison and Marconi moment. It's not Warhol influencing Hockney,
Which is true.
And so you're looking at this and you're going, man...
It's an impertinence to figures like Richter. It would have been an impertinence if this is a causal influence show. It would have been a grave impertinence to Richter or Alex Katz to somehow say, these are the pupils and this is their master.
It's partly framed that way, though.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
it's been read that way, whether it's framed that way or not. Everyone has been reading it that way.
Well, I think if you read it that way, if you don't read, because I mean, the labeling is actually trying to say it's trying to tell you not to look at it that way. But yes, you're right. I mean, if you've gone to a big show called Regarding Warhol and it's got lots of Warhol in it, that everyone else is going to look like an extra in his movie to some extent, unless the work stands up and. Does its own thing and
speaks for
itself.
But even if the word stands up, it's a biopic. You put your finger on it.
Right,
a biopic.
So it's an eccentric. Is it? So it's an eccentric way of offering another Warhol retrospective.
I don't know that I'd agree with that. I don't know that I would call it eccentric either. I think it was, you know, taking really obvious categories that we just went through that you can relate many, many artists, and we've all agreed that just about anybody could be included in that show. It was how, you know, I think it was conceived, and it was conceived to be a blockbuster, which it was. I think, I'm trying to remember what is her name? Anyway, a famous actress, one of the Spice Girls. What is her name?
Victoria.
Victoria Beckham. She went and she tweeted, and apparently the Met retweeted to their, you know, 950,000 fans. So I mean,
that sounds
exactly
like the only Warholian
wanted.
Moment in the entire show.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
that actually sounds like getting at something. You know, my complaint about the show
it
is
was
that it,
noted
you know,
as such by I forget what critic who noted exactly that.
You know, damn.
So
not me, unfortunately.
Sorry, someone got there first. But no, it's true. I mean, would Warhol have loved it? Probably. Would he have loved the show? Definitely. But does it, as a kind of academic or, you know, important historical show, really have any import? I think it's mixed. I think for people who are not as knowledgeable or art historically inclined, got a lot out of it. Although some of my students even were capable of critiquing it and finding too much of the work visually literal, you know, sort of presenting work that looks like pop art.
You know, I keep looking at the subtext, or in this case, even evertext, though. And I don't think it's any accident that Warhol gets this kind of a blockbuster show at the Met. It's their first outing with contemporary art, right? At a time when the collusion between money and art is at its historical peak, bar none.
I think the Met has had other excursions into
business art,
contemporary art.
And this is what we've got.
The Geldzahler show. I mean, there have been other excursions into contemporary art.
No, I didn't mean necessarily the show. I meant the moment.
Right.
At this point in time, yeah. I thought it would have been interesting to have had the categories be based on Warhol quotes. You know, I want to be a machine, or good business is the best art. And that was sort of along the lines of what, Blake, you were saying in your review, that ultimately the kind of essence of Warhol and his kind of ambivalent attitudes, I think those influences on contemporary artists or those that came after Warhol would have been a much more interesting show.
Or Jane, maybe other people's quotes about Warhol, like Richard's, Andy's the only artist I know that's for everything and against everything at the same time, or not for anything, that's what it was. Is for everything and nothing at the same time, that's what it was.
Is what I have to say about it.
A redeeming feature? I must say, I've been teaching art since 1960 again, and...
You didn't start teaching art in 1960,
I know,
did you?
What?
I've been teaching art since 1960.
Where?
Big quotes. Art since 1960. The diacriticals are critical here. I've been teaching, quote...
Got it. Art from 1960.
Art since 1960, 1960, end quote.
Not and? Since 1960.
Yes.
I had a vision of you.
I was born in 1975, so how could I be
a lot of face work.
Yeah.
I can see the Botox.
Well, it's just a godsend. Actually, the next show we're going to look at as well, it really saved me hours of PowerPoint, because I just said you have to go and see those shows. And there one has quite a good chunk, good in quantity rather than quality terms, perhaps, but of the quote-unquote canon that one needs to teach. Now, one feels obligated to teach.
But that's setting the bar so low. That is, that's saying there's no utter crap on the wall of the museum, so it's an adequate show, right? There's nothing so embarrassing that you don't even think your students should go see it. Is that as high as we're going to set the bar?
Well,
I mean, if it's true that it doesn't give a correct picture of Warhol, in fact, they shouldn't go see it, that they're going to get a non-Warhol show thinking they've seen a Warhol show.
Well, my feeling is they're going to go and see a lot of pictures, and they're going to see a lot of objects. I when they come back to the classroom, we do the unpacking and the critical constructing to try to form our notion of a canon. But somebody sort of emptying the filing cabinet of recent art onto the walls is a service to the teacher. One doesn't protect one's students by saying, don't see that show because it has a critical
problem. Well, no, but you make choices, you know. There's only so many shows you can take your kids to, and, you know, you choose ones that you think are going to be interesting.
I'd like to get back to something you just said and something Christian said. You said there are a lot of good pictures on the wall, and that's one of my complaints about this show and about all three shows, in fact, is that they're very much about taking a radicalized practice and turning it into a bunch of objects, in this case, almost only paintings. And that, I think, you could argue is the case in all of these shows, and it comes back to what Christian said. I feel the hand of the market, the hidden hand of the market in all these shows, that there's an assimilation to a traditional notion of precious objects in all three of these shows. It's subtler in some than in others, but the notion that there can be an anti-museological practice in these artists.
Well, you would say that of the Lucy Lepard show?
I would, absolutely. You're taking a lot of objects that were meant to oppose the notion of museums, of objects stuck in a museum, and what do? You take them, you treat them as objects, and you stick them in a museum. That seems that underneath there is percolating a very traditional notion of what art's all about. And I think that that's happening in the entire society, and it's partly because of the influence of the market. Even among those of us who aren't interested in the market, who reject the market, I think that we've been touched by the notion that art is essentially a series of objects created over history.
Is it perhaps that the museum is predicated on principles that it can't escape, regardless of the market, of venerating and preserving the individual, the specific object?
The move towards the canon is totally predicated on that. Yes.
Yeah.
Can a canon only be a canon of objects then? I mean, is that...
I don't see why not. Well, you can have a canon of ideas. That's what canons are.
While I agree with the fundamentals of your point, I like Jane, I'll be interested to see how you prove your thesis with the Lucy Lepard show.
We're running out of time, yeah, unfortunately.
I didn't think
there were so many objects.
Actually, let's move on to Lepard, because I'm rather curious by Blake's response to that. But
in general, I totally agree with the point that this particular moment, again, this collusion between the market and art, and particularly and specifically objects, obviously certain kinds of objects, especially, undergirds all the shows. In fact, undergirds everything that's happening right this minute.
Because there, in fact, is the title of the show. And here the show, regarding Warhol as a nebulous title, but materializing 6 years is very specific and literal and
problematic for art that's supposed to be material. Now.
Probably not actually, funnily enough, ultimately correct.
Did you notice how they had to fake that piece, that they had to glue it together so it would stand up?
Yeah,
it would
so it wouldn't fall over.
Which piece was that?
To Sarah,
but... Yes, that's it. That's our images. And for this is... this really, for me, is an intriguing show because here you have a book which, more than any other, trailblazed the notion... gave us the word, the concept, dematerialization, and critically, with some critical brilliance, identified... an anti-rarefied tendency in the art of her time. She was fascinated by the extent to which artists were mailing in their instructions, the way in which. Can we get the bit? Either shut the door or. So here is a book which is the artifact is so redolent of its moment. Do we all know the book by Lucy Lepard, The 6 Years? We saw the cover at the beginning. It's a period that's so redolent of a kind of spirit and a moment. The grainy black and whiteness, the typography, the facsimiles of instructions and letters and documents. The whole kind of bureaucratic aesthetic that went with the nonetheless very sort of humorous and sometimes poetic aesthetics of pioneer conceptual art. So here we then have an exhibition that tries to gather the things or some things that relate to the anti-thingness that's being is the subject of what is essentially a mammoth and sprawling bibliography, an archive. So it's making a museum out of what is an archive. So it has a conundrum, and then the conundrum for me is that you go through that big show, and Dorothea Rockburn's piece, which is poured paraffin on paper, is A, the nearest thing to a painting, and B, the most colorful, and C, the most visceral object in the show. You can actually still smell it decades later. Bureaucracy. Bureaucracy seems to be the theme of the book and the show.
That's funny. That's a really interesting take. I see where it comes from, but in a sense, they seem to be such anti-bureaucratic artists in so many ways.
Exactly. Right? Yes. Their pose is, we're rebels with a cause. We are the counterculture. We're deconstructing. They don't use the word yet, but they're sort of deconstructing ideas of creativity. But so much of it has to do with instructions and references and just index cards with typewritten words on them. So serialism and the grid are so ubiquitous in the art that's documented in Lippard that here are these sort of counterculture long-haired guys who are kind of doing a sort of bureaucracy.
And women.
Well, guys in the...
But it's sort of a brainy part of the counterculture. It's a neo-Marxist part of the counterculture. And if there's a bureaucracy to it, it basically sort of kicks in later once they basically join the academy.
I mean, it's institutional critique in the early sort of period. And Lucy Lippard calls conceptual art the adolescence for kind of later identity politics or political art that's more overt that develops in the late 70s and 80s. I do not think it's bureaucratic at all outside of the fact that it's in a museum, which naturally makes it bureaucratic. So it seems kind of redundant to me.
No, it's bureaucratic before it got to the museum.
Yeah, it
when
has
you
qualities
open the book.
Of bureaucratic quality. You know, its instruction sets, it tells you what to do, it says here are the rules,
but
you must follow
them. But it was all
them.
Very it's... provisional, and it was all meant to be very anti-commercial, and well, anti-commercial doesn't necessarily mean anti-bureaucratic. I do think you're, for me, it seems a kind of reach.
I think bureaucracy is the wrong word, too. I think sociology is the right term.
Yeah.
You know, that's art essentially largely as sociological instruction, you know.
And not all of it was instruction. I mean, the Rosario group was, doing things like locking people.
But the Rosario group is an outlier. That I would say that one thing. And that the one thing that generally gets me about, particularly about American conceptualism, and I think there is such a thing as opposed to, say, for example, global conceptualism.
Absolutely.
And there was this fairly good show, which, by the way, I didn't like at the time, but they've come around, at the Queen's Museum some long time ago, called Global Conceptualism, which ran the gamut of conceptualisms. And again, talking about Edison Marconi moments, the conceptual thing happened in lots of places globally. At a time way before the internet. And people in, I don't know, Argentina specifically, yeah. and in
Uruguay,
Eastern Europe, Uruguay, had to deal with different kinds of stresses, and their work became significantly political in a way that the American variant did not. Germany as well, boys.
Exactly.
Right? And so there is lip service paid to that. I don't want to, in the show, Lippard got significantly more involved with the Rosario group because she actually went down there with the New York Wines and she did shows. But I still find Lippard's version, even Lippard's version, but certainly the central tradition, Central American tradition, to be politics about art or politics about the art world rather than art about politics. And I think there's a real distinction to be drawn there. And I find that distinction exists in this show.
Well, and, I don't know if everybody in the audience saw the show, but it follows the book itself and the chronology of the book, and it goes year by year covering the 6 years, and that's basically the only thing that identifies where you are in relationship to, different work in the show, or the little numbers of the years up on the wall, which a design world friend of mine, who was with me when I saw the show, kind of thought was problematic because it's so information dense and text-based, the show. Even though I know, David, you think they're, perhaps that's a problem because it's not, you mentioned the one work that's, Dorothea's work that's, visceral. Conceptual art is generally not visceral. It can be. But, so it follows that, and that's its kind of reason for existing, is to reproduce this book in an exhibition format, and in a way inverting that, because the book itself was a kind of compilation of things that were not in any way commented on or analyzed by Leparge. She wanted the work to speak for itself. And I think since so much of it is text-based, whether that's because it's ephemera or the actual work itself was, you know, round text, makes sense. You know, if there had been more wall text explaining the textual pieces, it's just kind of overwhelming.
But there is, in fact, a book of the book, book of the show of the book.
Exactly.
So I do wonder why the show exists. I mean, that's a real question for me, and it's a question I think of a lot of times when I go see a very heavily curated show like that. You often think, and this might even be true of the Warhol show, if these are the points you want to make, then you can make them in a book better than you can make them on the wall. And that certainly seemed to be the case.
But that, unfortunately, is true of almost every show you see in a historical society or in a library. That I mean, unless... But people love those shows, including me, because you do get some visceral sense of something that is basically textual. But there's so much of a feeling for the time and the period when you actually see... objects.
But Blake's point is that these are wall texts about texts. That would be the difference.
As opposed to wall texts
about objects.
In fact, wall texts about texts that are deliberately trying not to be objects. That is, wall texts not just about texts, but about texts that reject the whole notion of art being constituted by as objects. So that seems to make it a little stranger.
Yes, it's rarefying the dematerialized, which is an inherent oxymoron.
I guess the counter question is, can they make it into the museum in terms of, can the museum fulfill its canonizing function if they don't bring it in as an object?
Well, and here's another question.
Even though
it's a sheet of text. Do we want them to, right? We want these works to be in the canon, or I do at least, right? Because we care about them. But can they be in the canon and not be built around the same criteria that traditionally canonic works are? So we're stuck. I mean, we're sort of putting the museum in an impossible
situation. I think
we're
being a little heavy-handed here, because look.
Also, getting back to just the idea of why the show, which Blake raised.
That's a good question.
I mean, it was, I think, ultimately, you know, it was an homage to Lucy Lepard, and there was at some point at which they said it was an example of a feminist curatorial methodology.
It is in the Sackler wing, after all.
Exactly.
Or even more to the point, seeing as the four of us are sitting here, of a critic actually having a significant influence upon art production.
As she did.
A lot more than can be said about any of us, to be perfectly frank.
Absolutely. And she was an activist, and obviously her curatorial projects are included, and that's where it departs a little bit from the book, is inserting that aspect of her career and its development and the kinds of things that she did outside of curating all the number shows, you know, doing things with the Art Workers Coalition and other kind of activist things that I think are really important and meaningful.
Yeah, I've got to answer Blake here and say that my co-panelists here are much more enthusiastic about conceptual art than I am, but I think it's a brilliant show, even though it does not give me visually that much pleasure, because it's an imaginative engagement with a canonical text, and it really does homage where homage, some homage is due to a very, very remarkable person, Lepard. And it's also a very thought-provoking show to see work which no viewer is going to go and see that show and not realize that, okay, there's a lot of ideas, a lot of text, a lot of instructions, a lot of references, a lot of some postcards. But this was the moment. This is what it's describing. I mean, it can't get away from what it's describing. And if what it's describing is considered to varying degrees by everybody to be of importance, well, that's the way it has to be dealt with.
Well, it's also interesting to consider it in terms of the little bit of sort of similar art production now, there's a little bit of political art sort of coming, bubbling up out of the surface, particularly connected to Occupy and what have you. So it's interesting to think of it in that context, right? At least it is for me.
No, and
it has been bubbling up throughout. I mean, this stuff is at the root of art. It's never ended, right? There's never been a moment.
The Times Square show is, I think, it can be seen as an extension of it.
And I don't think it started here either. I mean, it started Dada and much earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. And Lucy Lepard cites Dada as the most sort of meaningful and interesting historical period.
Or her first experience
for her,
yeah. It's interesting that you mention historical shows, because I've made the argument that it's a mistake to think that history museums and art museums are the same institutions at all. They have the same their word attached to them, but they're fundamentally different kinds of things. And it may be that the Loose of the Part show is actually a historical museum show that happens to be in an art museum.
That's exactly right. That's what I would think. It's a science museum.
It's presenting art. I don't agree at all.
But it's not presenting art. See, it seems to me that art museums, one function they could have is a kind of library function. That is where they present works of art, and you then do with them what you need to. If it's a Cézanne show, then you're free to do whatever you want with the Cézanne show. And in a sense, there's no gap between the object being presented and the ways in which you can conceive of them.
The conundrum here is not in the museology, it's in the work itself. Because if you go to the Morgan Library, on one floor you can see something about Dickens, and on another floor you can see French master drawings of three centuries. Obviously, one is a history thing and the other is an art thing. The fact that this looks more like a history thing than an art thing, even though actually it is the art, comes down to the art.
I think it's down to the work, too. I'm with David here. I mean, I wonder what an ideal show of this kind of work would look like to you. Would it be all the performances happening? Is that what it would be?
Something like that. That is, I think you're wrong. I don't think we're seeing the art in this show. I see relatively little evidence that what we're seeing is, I mean, you know, is the Lee Lozano grass piece where she smokes as much weed as she can possibly smoke for however long that is. Are we seeing that piece? It's not clear to me that we are.
You know what? Neither did anybody
it's
else.
Based, well, that's right. But it's based on the book, right? You can't, you know, exactly. you're circling around the fact that was the concept and focus of the exhibition.
But the book itself was
and
only...
And the book itself presented the archival information.
Right, that's right. And the book, in fact, is not a show. So if, you know...
Well, it was thought of by some as a show
object.
In a printed form. And that idea continues in the exhibition through other examples of curatorial projects that don't exist in physical space in this same anti-institutional stance that is consistent throughout this period.
Could we not actually think of the exhibition as being the book on walls and floor? It's in fact a read.
It is.
The book.
That's why it's called materializing, because it's inverting
dematerializing. But you guys are describing just about all the conceptual work done between 62 and 80 that's reliant on text and documentation and photographic documentation, whether it's in Lepard's book or in any other book, or in fact in no book at all. This is an inherent problem with showing that work. I think, like,
showing being the operative problem, the problematic word, right? I mean, that's...
But because these documents and these texts were made, and they were made not just to be reproduced between hardbound covers, they were also made to be actually sort of shown in gallery context, minimally.
That's
if not
an
museum,
interesting
and obviously
question,
they did not want that.
Very minimally. I think that's counter to the majority of the
I mean,
work.
Let's remember there are artists who reject being in shows like this. Ian Wilson won't be in a show, right?
But not
at
the majority. Most of the artists in that show are alive, and they didn't object
and are making good money off of these objects. I mean, Vito Acconci's studio was funded by him selling these
objects. Well, of course. That's the sad part, is that a lot of this work did end up getting what was considered to be ephemeral and not art in the sense that it was just documentation, does now sell for great amounts of money. But that doesn't undermine the show itself, as far as I'm concerned.
No, not the money doesn't, but the object, the turning things that are supposed to be non-object based into objects seems to me obviously problematic. And I think in some way we all agree. We all say these aren't the...
But it's there are objects and there are objects. There are artifacts, and then there are...
What are we going to do? Have Vito Acconci do his following piece? I mean, it can't be done. It's done. It's historical. It's a finished work.
But can we just, before we move on to Times Square...
And it costs money, goddammit.
Yeah.
We've gone from the 50s to the 60s, and now we're bouncing to 1980. But let's put Blake on the spot here. You made a point that... putting myself on the spot, because I can't remember what your point was, because it got lost a bit.
I think I've repeated it three
You've
times.
Repeated it three times? we'll excuse you from repeating it a fourth time. Then let's have a look at the Times Square show.